his ADHD, and there's definitely a genetic component because I also have ADHD. And I think that's originally why I went into the field of special education. I knew that I thought differently. However, to highlight your point about education changing, that the negative kind of ADHD label isn't really there anymore because we've seen so many successful entrepreneurs and individuals that have ADHD that are now using it as a strength. Right? They're able to, you know, think divergently and think out of the box. They're able to really focus on things that make big impacts in their job, in their life, in their career. That hyper focus, that instead of thinking it is a negative, I think that ADHD can be, you know, considered positive in many respects. It does come some with some symptoms and maybe some that are not so positive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Dr. Christine Powell. Christine is the founder of Learning by Connecting Education Therapy, and she is also a special educator by training, and she lives in Ventura, California, and she actually reached out to me on LinkedIn because of this show. So I am super excited to have her here. So Christine, thank you for coming today.
Oh, thanks, Jet. Thanks for having me.
So Christine, tell us a little bit about your business and about your background.
Sure. I am the founder of Learning by Connecting Education Therapy, and I know that's a mouthful, but as a special educator for over 20 years, when COVID happened, there was a tremendous gap for the students that I served in special education. And so I moved into the private sector in order to fill that gap. And that gap was really coming from students that were not able to make the transition online, were having huge gaps in their executive functioning skills, and we'll get into that a little later, but they became very apparent. So I serve individuals in middle through high school and even up to college that have ADHD or unique learning profiles, and because of those unique learning profiles have deficits in their executive functioning, the organization, planning, critical thinking, problem solving.
So your profession, your expertise has really been in executive functioning. How did that come about?
I was a trained special educator, so I had a master's degree in special education, and I was fortunate enough to go on and get my master's degree in education and qualified to become a Fulbright scholar and do a Fulbright 6-month really deep dive into Singaporean education. And I chose Singapore. I had to write an inquiry into it. And then I was able to go to Singapore and work with the Singaporean education, which is some of the top in the world, right? It's some of the highest scoring on some of these world tests, PISA and TIMSS tests. And I was looking specifically at students with unique learning challenges. And my takeaway was that the Singaporean education system really drills down on executive functioning skills within their overall curriculum. So each teacher within the system has a built in curriculum within their content, helping students really master the art of planning, organizing, time management, response inhibition, controlling their behaviors and recognizing those behaviors, increasing focus. So I came back to the United States after my Fulbright opportunity and was so excited. I wanted to tell everybody about what I had found and what I had discovered. And then COVID hit. And although I did speak at the Department of State and I have spoken at many, many education conferences, it was like getting the news out is really difficult because we're so ingrained in teaching, you know, just content, academic content, we're not really teaching kids how they learn, right? How they learn best.
Right.
So that's when I kind of went off on this tangent and decided that that was my mission. That's what I need.
Yeah. And what a great mission. What a great mission. Now, how much, explain to me and for our listeners, but to me as well, how, because I think there's a real connection. Everybody's talking about social emotional learning and how this is such a, and it is a pandemic in our country right now of people are just struggling with their social emotional. So, but I think there's a big piece of that. I think that if you feel like you have control of the choices and where you're going in your life, I have found that when I'm organized, and maybe that's a personality thing too, but when I know and have an idea of what my future is and goals and those kinds of things, I am more settled emotionally than I am at other times when I'm not, when things aren't as clear. Do you find that to be the truth?
Yeah, that's perfect. That, well said. That's absolutely on point. I often, my students often hear me repeat this mantra, organize your mind, organize your life.
Mm.
Executive functioning skills are those skills that are located in the prefrontal cortex of our brain. So they're the last skills to develop. They're the last part of our brain to really develop over time. And research has shown possibly around age 25, 26, those areas of our brain are fully mature. So if you think about the development over this span of when children and are going through school, right, they're all at different levels, especially students that are neurodiverse.
Mm-hmm.
They may be 2 to 3 years behind. So when we look at the composite of executive functioning skills, and I tend to think there are approximately 9 of them, I categorize them into 9, but response inhibition, like being able to control your emotions, that part of your brain in a student is not fully developed. So when they blurt out in class, or they're unable to raise their hand when given that prompt, or they're so excited about something that they're out the room doing it before the teacher has given them directions to get out of their seat and continue, those are things that are learned. And those things can be, you know, bolstered through strategies, whether it's by the teacher or through outside support.
Wow, that's really good. That's really good. So how do you connect with schools? What is your best, like, I know you've got this amazing business and a tool that is so amazingly needed. So how does that work for you as an entrepreneur? Because you really are an entrepreneur who's stepping out and doing things. And for those other people, in, like myself, I'm an entrepreneur. I've started Lighthouse. I'm still doing, you and I are both still dealing education, right? We're just doing it in a way that is not, quote, typical. So how did that happen? And how do you provide those services to the school districts?
Initially, it was, as an SLP, you're invited to those IEP meetings students have. But as a teacher within the district confines, I know that when we're sitting down for an IEP meeting, the services that we realistically can provide that student kind of juxtapose what's on their IEP.
Right. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, it comes with the executive functioning teaching students, their unique learning profiles is not in there, right? It's extra time on a test, or, you know, maybe having notes written for them, or even sitting in the front of the class. So having the opportunity to really critically look at some of these ed psych reports that parents get, they're lengthy. When a student is being identified as having a learning challenge, whether it's ADHD or a processing deficit or a speech and language impairment, they go through pretty significant and rigorous academic testing. And at the end, it produces recommendations.
Right.
Okay? The recommendations I use to turn into goals, realistic goals that student can actually use, right, goal-wise, to implement in their classes to bolster their grades, their confidence, their all those executive functioning. Yet, when we look at it from a school's perspective, we look at it from how to help them in specific content areas. They need to get X number or more right on a math test, or they need to be able to scaffold for an English composition. That doesn't necessarily teach them how they learn.
Right.
Or to answer your question, to get back, like how I approach, you know, schools, it's really offering teacher professional development.
Okay.
How to implement executive functionings within their classroom, just from my experience and through research, and I'm published as well, research that I've done and just strategies that I've learned over time to help them really make their classroom executive functioning, you know, applicable. That
right.
Students can gain confidence and clarity and also learn the strategies and structure to really help them with executive functions. So, Janet, we're not born with executive functions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would think that, you know, you come out of the womb, you know, able to organize your notebook or backpack or able to plan your week. That doesn't happen. And it typically happens with parents being our first models. And if a student is lucky enough to have a really organized teacher along their academic path, that's fantastic. However, I think you know as well as I do, the amount of responsibilities teachers have nowadays with content, academic content, the executive functioning skills and strategies are often left on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
Students that get it, that's fantastic. And the ones that don't often get left behind. And unfortunately, those are students with often unique learning profiles.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you have a teacher, and I can even tell you, I can't even tell you for sure who that person was, but, and I think it's personality type too. I think there are personalities that are prone. I'm more type A than others, you know. I used to be an ENFP, if you're familiar with those, and now I'm an ENFJ because I have my own business. But whatever that test is, boy, there you go. Thank you. I wanted to say Myers-Briggs and I thought I was wrong. So there you go. I've taken those tests, but they do change over time. And but I think that when you have the opportunity to be successful and to have those goals. And I always tell people, it's like, oh, it's not a goal if it's not written down. You got to write those goals down. You've got to, but to have somebody to help you guide you through those kinds of activities, which is, I think, is exactly what you're talking about, and showing you how you can be successful within how your personality is too. I mean, I think it's not just because I'm type A that I am successful. It's that there are type A people that aren't successful. There are type all kinds of, you know, but you have to move forward and know that you have an option. You have to make choices. You have to continue to step into, for me, I always have to step into what God's got for me, right? Because I'm a Christian, but you have to step into what you're going, and you cannot let others tell you. And too many people, unfortunately, in their lives have somebody in there and an influential person say, nah, you'll never be anything. You'll never blah, 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 blah. You know, and it's horrible. It's horrible. And there are people that break out of that cycle of poverty, if you will, but it's just really, gosh, just no, if you're listening to this and you're not, you know, you don't have that person in your life, you do. It's inside of you. You have it. You just have to continue to fight for what you want in this world. And I think that that's just a beautiful thing. And it is executive function. It's like what you're talking about, right?
So, Jen, I think just to highlight what you've said is confidence is the biggest thing. They'll say, well, what is the measurable results? Like, I send my child to you. What parents actually report back almost immediately is an increase in confidence, because not only am I a coach and helping them understand how they learn best, mm-hmm. like what is their learning profile, even with a learning deficit or a learning challenge, understanding to lean into their strengths. So maybe mm-hmm. they're not an auditory learner, but being able to understand that maybe they need it in writing or maybe they need it in video form. So really just kind of teaching them how they take in information and apply. It's once they know that, right, the confidence boosts because they're like, wow, now I understand. And I wrap it around academics because my area of focus is typically students. Because I'm able to go into their, you know, school portals. I'm able to pull out salient information and really drill down on information that they're headed back into school the next day. They're able to apply the strategies. And all of a sudden, you know, they're doing well. I'm like, wow, right. That actually works. So they're getting positive feedback all the time. And mm-hmm. of course, and their confidence boosts. And they're like, okay, I understand now. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, being a student, I know I felt it in my life, being, you know, learning something new and having that challenging moment where you're like, I just don't get it. Maybe mm-hmm. I am not smart enough in math. I'm not a math person, right? Well, mm-hmm. you just don't get it, as we know by, you know, research by Duckworth. You just don't get mm-hmm. it yet.
Right.
They have to take the strategies through problem solving. How do you solve this problem? And that's part of executive functioning, leaning into our strengths and kind of helping fill those gaps, but not focusing on, you know, those negative things, but bolstering those things that really are empowering to us.
There's a big difference between being supported by somebody who's walked in your shoes and someone who hasn't. At Lighthouse Therapy, our leadership team is made up of experienced clinicians who've actually worked in schools. We understand the pressure you're under and what real support looks like. That's why our therapy solutions, whether it be virtual, hybrid, or in person, are built with you in mind. No complicated systems or red tape, just streamlined support and seasoned therapists who are ready to make a difference. Learn more at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together. And in special education, that right there is so key. And it's been a shift that I've seen. You know, you and I have been in education for 30 years. And when I started in the 90s, I graduated in 94, and, you know, I was an SLP back then. But the SLP I was then and the SLP I am today, you know, over after 30 years is different. But education has changed too. And it's like, we don't look at just what is wrong with this child, right? We look at where are your strengths? How can we take the good things that you have, the amazing things that you have, and use those strengths to help you to be successful in education? And those are, and we talked a little bit before this about accommodations. You know, we talked a little bit about accommodations, but, you know, it just is, and that's amazing, you know. And neurodivergence, that wasn't a word. It was like, you were weird. You were retarded. Excuse the expression. You know what I mean? I mean, those were mental retardation and those were buzzwords at one point, not good ones, but, you know, we talk about equity and equality and all of those things. But I love where education is going today, because it's about, and having children, having a son who is not neurodivergent, he gets it. He's like, I don't think like everybody else. I don't think like you, Mom. I'm like, help me to understand when he's struggling with something. It's one of the, you know, we just go, when I get frustrated with him, he's 26. He's not a little kid anymore, but he just will say to me, he's like, Mom, I don't think the same way as you. I was like, okay, well, help me to understand how you do think about it so I can support what you're trying to do. And that's huge for them, because 30 years ago, he wouldn't, you know, what is wrong with you, kid? Right. You know, just, so I love that for our special education kids today.
My son is also neurodivergent. He has ADHD, and there's definitely a genetic component, because mm-hmm. I also have ADHD. And I think that's originally why I went into the field of special education. I knew that I thought differently. However, to highlight your point about education changing, the negative kind of ADHD label isn't really there anymore, because we've seen so many successful entrepreneurs and individuals that have ADHD that are now using it as a strength, right? Mm-hmm. They're able to, you know, think divergently and think out of the box. They're able to really focus on things that make big impacts in their job, in their life, in their career, that hyper-focus. That mm-hmm. So instead of thinking it is a negative, I think that ADHD can be, you know, considered positive in many respects. It does come with some symptoms and maybe some other things that are not so positive. However,
but those are all things that can be managed, right? I mean, those are all things. My son does not clean well. He has somebody that comes and cleans for him, and he goes and he makes sure that what needs to be done is done, and he works for me. So we're blessed that way. But, you know, it's like those things that he knows he's not going to do well with, he manages by, and that's just one, you know, but I mean, just, he knows that this is not something that I'm going to be successful at because of, and so timers and making sure that somebody is there every other week, and he's blessed in that he can afford that. Not everybody can, but there are things that you can do to manage it. And boy, when it comes to tech and the things that he is really good at, it, because he also has ADHD, is, you know, he knows it. And he's worked for me since day one. So now 7 years. And if I need some, I don't even ask his dad. His dad's my CTO, but he's my husband of 30 years. So he tries to explain it to me, and we conflict because, you know, we're married, and sometimes how he's trying to explain it to me is different than how my son is. And he comes here and he works out of our house, because he knows that he would be too distracted at home to, you know, even though we work from home, he comes here. We have an office in our house, and that's where he works, because he knows that he has to work when he's here. When he's at home, now it's getting better. He's been able to do better, but that's been one of those accommodations for him. But boy, when something breaks on my computer, I'm calling him, Jonathan, can you come and help me with my computer? Can you help me fix this? Because I know that he's for 7 years, he's been training crazy therapists like me who go, just fix it. I want it to work. And he's so calm, and he understands it so well that he can. And
like he understands the circle of competence.
Yeah.
He understands mm-hmm. where he really shines. And I thought that's really important. And especially with students that are in middle and high school, finding your circle of competence and really where you shine and where you can make a difference and where to lean into mm-hmm. is an important component in just the learning process altogether.
I did mention that nowadays there's this real push for medication for an age with ADHD. And before I was an advocate of, because being a teacher, right, we would see those kids come in, you know, on Ritalin or some of the older medications, right, where they were almost zombie-like. And I'm sure you saw that in your practice as well. And I thought, oh, no, this is, we've medicated the ADHD out of them.
Right.
They're going to focus. They're in front of us. But we've lost their essence, their personality.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, we've made a real switch. And I've done a mind shift as well, that possibly a hybrid approach. Obviously, you know, you have to talk to your medical practitioner. But sometimes, you know, some medication is really helpful, but also the behavioral aspects of it as well. Like being able to teach a student how to plan and organize, you know, their week, their month, their school year.
Mm-hmm.
You can't medicate that.
No, right.
And those are strategies that need to be taught, but you can medicate some of the symptoms so they're able to sit and focus a little mm-hmm. there. So yeah. Those strategies still need to be taught in an explicit way. However, like I said, the medication can be an integral part of treatment for somebody that has neurodiversity or, you know, ADHD.
Yeah. And it's individualized. Just like an IEP, it's individualized. You have to talk to your professional and you have to talk. Yeah. You just have to, yeah, get wise counsel. So, you know, some of what you said you do is professional development. So let's touch on that a little bit. Like how would you, or what kinds of things would you say to a kindergarten teacher versus a third grade teacher versus, let's just go how you break it up, I don't know. I'm just, you know, like I know there's things that we should be doing with the littles and then the middles and then the high schools and then the adults. I know that there's different levels. So what kind of quick 5-minute advice could you give? I don't want to, but. Just because it's important, I think it is different at different levels.
I think it's like, let me give this to the parents first. We're like focusing on the parent first. Mm-hmm. Because really, we are models for our children. And my father always said it was a three-legged stool, right? You have your parents, you have the school teacher, and you have the child. All mm-hmm. have to be really actively engaged in this learning process. So if you have a child, say in elementary or middle school, that is constantly losing things, like they can't, they're not, organization is off, they can't pack their backpack. My first recommendation to parents would be to have the, in concert with that child, come up with an organizational system, whether that's a specific folder that they keep their homework in, color code it for class, but the student has to be actively engaged in the process. And how many well-meaning parents out there have created the file system to end all file systems? And the child's like, what? What is?
Yeah.
They weren't part of the process. Right. So in anything you do at home, whether you're planning, one tip I give to parents is to get a calendar for their fridge, an old school calendar, month in advance, and really start chalking down what are the important days that are having, you know, we're going to have in the month of August. When do we go back to school? Put a sticker on it. Let's label it. Let's count back the days. What that happens, because in order to plan and organize, you need conceptual ideas of time, and that looks like in a month, in a week, in a year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Another important strategy would be telling time. We often see in classes now and on our computers, the time is up in the right-hand corner. It's all digital. And I don't know about you, Janet, when you're in school, some of the classes that I were in, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the longest class in the world. I've got 5 minutes left on that clock.
Yeah.
And it seemed like an hour in my head. Right.
And
however, students now aren't feeling it the same way. Many students, I'll be very honest with you, don't even know how to tell time, how mm-hmm. to analog clock.
On an analog clock.
That's it. And during COVID, they were not, like, you're supposed to learn a little bit in first grade, really push it in second grade, and we remediate in third for telling time. Well, nowadays, that's not happening. We just assume students have it, and we move forward. Mm-hmm. So helping your child kind of guesstimate, like do a guessing game or gamify what that looks like. Teachers can do this as well. How long do you think it will take you to complete this task? Let's take a guess. And then let's see, is it 5 minutes, 10? Were you way off?
Right
on. Right?
Wow.
To get that conceptual idea of 5 minutes. So when your mom yells, we're leaving in five, you know what that feels like, and you've internalized that just through practice and gamified learning.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really neat, because sometimes I stink at that. Even me, you know, it's like I just will be like, okay, yeah, we can get that done in 10 minutes. I have a shirt that says, even I don't believe I'll be ready in 5 minutes.
Visual timers are really good as well. But yeah. That kind of tick back, because I have ADHD, I have time blindness, and I use a visual timer because I can go off on tangents and with things really am invested in. So it's a clock that kind of ticks back. It shows a red area for the time that you have. And when that red area disappears, it means your time is gone. So it really helps me stay on track. And it's a resource that I use in my own practice. And I tell teachers, this is really helpful. Maybe not just for one student in your class, but when students are mindful of time, right? Not just looking at a digital clock, but seeing the minutes pass, they become more cognitively aware in a concrete way.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things we also, poor Jonathan, I love my son. He just is a great example of what we're doing here today. And once this comes out, I'm going to say, hey, Jonathan, make sure you listen into this one, because it was a lot about you. And he'll be like, okay, mom, whatever, you know, but we will talk about the same thing around him a million times. And we think, because we're talking about something while he's in the room, that he's hearing it. No, he will. We'll say, okay, time to go. We're gonna go do this thing or whatever. Or tomorrow is this thing. And he will say, we even got him a shirt once that said, "Wait, what? What are we talking about?" So just because your child is in the room, in the environment, does not mean that they are hearing. You know, sometimes they hear too much. We know that, but sometimes they're not. He's doing his own thing. He's got his headphones in. He's listening to. He's on his phone. He's whatever. And you have to make sure for your children that you go, okay, this is what's happening this week. Are you aware? Did you hear me? And I'll tell his dad's got a touch of it. I swear he's never been diagnosed, but I've learned with him. I have to tell him the same thing 3 times. If it's something that he doesn't really care about, or it's not something that's necessarily in his wheelhouse of things that he's going to do, but he has to be there, I'll tell him 3 times just to make sure. And sometimes by the third one, he's annoyed with me because I'm like, you've told me twice now. I'm like, okay, you got it. Other times he's like, you never told me that. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah,
as an adult, right?
Yeah.
You know, he entitles that. But as a child, right, when we don't pick up information within a classroom, we're the oddball. We're the we're the last one in line, the last ones to get ready. And that can have a really strong impact on confidence and belonging within our classroom, right? We always feel like everybody else knows what's going on but us.
And we're being yelled at because we're not ready. Yeah. So they're always getting that. They're always the one that's in trouble.
Yeah. So really pinpointing, like with an IEP or an individualized education plan, having the teachers really have these prompts and, you know, not calling students out, but having strategies within the class for all students. Like, we're counting down now. We're going to make the transition in 5 minutes, right? What is the hands on the clock? What is that going to look like? All right, perfect. And then having those slower learners run that may have a difficulty with time management, they be our counter. Those that are going to, you know, call attention to the clock when it is time. And maybe their attention will be totally focused on the time, but that's okay. That's a learning moment.
Yeah,
right. I'm back to that other activity. But in that moment, they are responsible for time management. And that's an empowering thing as well.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my gosh, this has been such an incredible conversation. There's so many things. I know you and I could sit and talk for another 30 minutes, but our time is up. Yeah, I know. I wish we could catch them all, but you know, as time goes on, we can definitely have you back, and I'd love to have you back again. But let's plug your business. Let's talk about where people can find you. Tell people how to find you and how to find your services.
I have a website, learningbyconnecting.com, and you can find me on LinkedIn as well, Dr. Christine Powell, and ADHD. I call myself an ADHD expert and executive functioning specialist. And I see a lot of students online as well, especially students in high school and college. And sitting in a brick and mortar office is often very difficult for them. And research shows that is right, the zone of proximal learning that they are comfortable in as well. So I'm also on social media, whether that's Facebook or Instagram, learningbyconnecting.com. So yeah, even if you have a question, I offer, you know, a free consult. So if you do have questions, I think a lot of parents come to me, you know, initially just seeking information, like, what is this? I know my son and my daughter has trouble in these areas. What can I do? And I do not mind like providing information to help you help your child, because I was in that situation as a parent. And I think that's what, you know, I've been blessed with this, you know, kind of a platform to help individuals. And if I can give information that helps just one child or one parent, right, that's a success in that day. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what it is. And we do that every day, don't we? We are here to do the work that has been given to us, and the gifts that we've been given. And each of us has our own. And that's the thing too, boy, if you're listening and you don't think you have a gift, you have one. You have it. Just start, keep looking for it. Keep striving. I never thought that this would be a platform where I would like be talking about encouraging people, but it's so true. You know, it's like, you don't get to where you are by giving up. You keep going. You do it again. You try again. You try again. You try again. You know, the light bulb, I remember the quote, but is it Einstein? Am I right? See, I get myself into trouble when I do these things. He talked about, and it's not Einstein, Thomas Edison, I think. Edison, thank you. Yeah, light bulb Edison. Somebody asked him like 300 and some times, somebody's got this fact and someone's going to correct me, and that's totally fine. I don't care. But the point is, he kept trying until he found that filament that would work for the light bulb. And they said, well, what would you have done if that one didn't work? He's like, I tried it another 500 times. You know, you just have to keep stepping in and keep trying. You'll get there. You will get there. And don't let anybody tell you that you can't, because you absolutely can. And I want that for people. I want that for our educators. I want that for our schools. I want that for our kids. It's amazing. It's an amazing world. And you just have to keep doing it, right?
Well, thanks, Janet. Thanks for the combo today.
Yeah. And thanks for being on the Brighter Together podcast, because you know we are brighter together.
Awesome.